We're without our mayor tonight, so I'm gonna nominate Mr. Shelton to be our mayor pro tem for the evening.
Had to get it in quick.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Harris, are you okay with that?
Yep, sounds good.
All in favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay. Well, welcome everyone. We excuse our mayor who's away on city business tonight, and glad to have Mr. Harris with us electronically. Let's move to our invocation. I'm not as good as the whole welcome and roll call thing as the mayor is.
It'd be great.
Anyway, Mr. Ting.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful for this day and grateful the opportunity to meet in council work session. Blessed that thy spirit might be upon us as we discuss the needs and concerns of the city, and bless the food that we are partaking in, may strengthen and nourish our bodies, and bless us to have a good evening and be able to work civilly and expeditiously and efficiently as we go about our business tonight. We say these things in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mr. Tingey. So we're on to item C, mayor and council coordination. Does anybody have anything they need to coordinate?
I have some questions.
Sure.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah.
I'm wanting more information about the Tuesday Summerfest event activity.
We're going to talk about that later in the work session.
Okay.
If you want to hold those questions, we're going to talk about the parade and some other things, and Janelle and her team will be here, and we can answer those questions for you.
Thank you. Wait, get it on the agenda so fast. That was impressive.
Here was our last chance before Summerfest, so I think there might be some questions. And your shirts are here. They're at your seats at the DS, and there's some other things, and Matt will deliver those personally to your house.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. Any other coordination?
I do have another question. Can anybody give us some information about the Envision Utah Future of Water event on Thursday? Does anybody?
I apologize. I don't have more information on that. Jason, do you have any information on the Envision Water conference
Envision
on Thursday?
Utah Future of Water on Thursday.
I haven't heard about that. I'm sorry.
I can track some down for. I think that's the one that was a buy ticket event. I don't know if anybody's going to that.
Okay. I think I emailed Mel and said I was interested.
I will follow up.
Is that the one the mayor asked you to cover for to check out, or is that a different one?
It's really a Grand American, right?
I think she said she wanted to talk to me about it, but she never officially asked me to.
I think that was the one that she had planned on going to, but she was out of town and had intended that she go. Was either that one or one prepared with someone, but I think it was.
Okay.
So you were intending to go, so I need to find out if you've been registered.
Quasi planning on it. So I think I emailed Camille, asked her to, but I haven't heard anything back. Mm-hmm. If she could maybe give me an update on.
Hey, Tamara.
Yes.
I just found the website with the agenda and all that. I'll forward that to you.
That'd be awesome. Thank you. Is it the Grand America on Thursday?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Mayor, in fact, I know the mayor was planning to go.
Okay.
But couldn't, because she's out of town. And I was invited to part of it, but I'm not able to go.
So no staff are going. Okay. No.
I am emailing Melanie right now to check on registration.
Okay. Thank you.
If she hasn't registered, you want me to have you?
Yeah. I'd like to. Water's a big deal, so thank you.
I think the immediate future of water is flooding.
Thank you, Mr. Shelton. I feel much better.
Does that answer your question?
I just get all kinds of good answers from you people. I'm just feeling so spoiled. Thank you. Yeah, if you don't mind telling me, Mr. Lewis, how... If she's got me registered.
Just one quick question. Are you finished?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I think it's probably for Janelle. I never heard back from Colby on the playground for Jordan Ridge. I don't know who.
As far as the timing of replacement goes,
Yeah, I mean, he said that it should be done in a week, and that's been 2 weeks ago,
okay.
So I haven't heard from him.
Let me find out, and I'll get right back.
Okay, so I didn't know if we could do some little fun thing, have a little ribbon cutting, and let all the neighbors around, you know, surrounding kind of know, and make a fun event of it on the Saturday or something.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anything else, folks? Mr. Harris, anything from you?
Nothing that needs to be brought forward at the moment.
Thank you. Okay, so let's review our regular council meeting. So we have a proclamation recognizing National Public Works Week. Jason, is there, I guess we just read the proclamation.
You're going to show a quick video to start when we get to that agenda item, and then reading of the proclamation, and that's it.
And
simple.
Okay. All right. Great. Are any of your guys going to be here? Or?
No, they've been working hard all day.
I bet. Let them have the evening. Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah.
There's an item on our agenda that's not in that list tonight as item H, and that's the swearing-in ceremony of the Youth Council. Mm-hmm. That will happen in two parts. We'll have Director of Recreation Janelle Payne actually introduce the Youth Council and make a comment or two, and then the actual swearing-in ceremony will be performed by the Deputy City Recorder, Cindy Valdez. So.
Okay.
And I think we have the mayor's binder in there, so you'll have all the notes for the meeting, and that's on that agenda.
Okay. Great. Then, so we'll have the swearing in of the youth council, and then the other item is a public hearing item, and it's the CTAA legislation.
Right.
That's the...
So that's the follow-up from the discussion you had in your work session last week with the hoteliers. And that's to decide whether or not to support the 2% increase on fees for hotels for them to support attracting business and commerce to the city.
Okay.
So that'll be your chance to gain any public input, have your final discussion, and then decide whether or not to support that resolution.
Okay. And you all recall the conversation last time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think
I forwarded you an email that the mayor had received, kind of answering that question if there'd be future support to the Visit Salt Lake group.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we can have our conversation there for that, I think. So we're off to the... Item E.
We will need to add a closed session tonight for the discussion of property at the end
purchase.
Of the meeting. The purchase
sale
of real property.
And so we'll need to add that to our...
Yes, so when we start the meeting, we'll need to amend the agenda to add a closed session for the purpose of the discussion of the purchase or sell of real property. And we'll do it after staff comments. That way they can all go home.
Okay.
Rachel, don't smile so big.
They're all doesn't mean it has to be a lot longer.
They've all got bets placed if you can be done by 7:15 tonight.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. Well, what are the odds?
50-50.
I won't hold us up.
So all right.
7:30 written all over it for sure.
Yeah. Let's go to item E1, our South Jordan Arts Council Master Plan.
Thanks for the time and for having us. It's recreation, so we're doing kind of fun, and you have your $100 bills in front of you, so that's to pay you off for your support.
Patrick's missing out.
In between meetings, if you have time, we have information boards set up in the break room with different kinds of art or ways to support the arts in the city. and we've used that as a public engagement tool through this process, and we'll get into a little bit. But we wanted to get your feedback on that as well as the council and have you interact in that way too. So this is Jake McIntyre. He's with Union Creative, the consultant that was selected for the Arts Master Plan here in the city, which we've been trying to kind of get off the ground and going for a few years now. So we're really excited that we're in the middle of this process. And then I think you all know Tiffany Parker, our arts coordinator here in the city as well. So I get the fun part of just turning this over to Jake, and he can go over a presentation about where we're at in the process and where we're going and all that good stuff. So
perfect.
There you go.
Thank you. Can I just get a quick couple of introductions from the council members so I know who I'm speaking to? That'd be possible.
This is Jason.
Hi, Jason. I'm skipping you.
You see me a few times.
Tamara Zander.
Hi, Tamara.
Don Schultz.
Don.
Brad Marler.
Thanks. And all, everybody else is tagged.
Patrick Harris.
Support.
Harris.
Harris is staff.
Staff.
Patrick, he's a council member.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Did I...
They're getting it.
They're getting it. Okay.
And this is all new information from a couple hours ago, right? Everything's been updated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a slightly different presentation. It's a combination of what you saw last week and what you saw this week.
We have a steering committee, and Jason is on that one. Yeah. So we met this morning.
So while we're pulling that up, I'll just introduce myself a bit more completely. So I run a creative consulting firm based here in northern Utah. We do long-range strategic planning, master planning, almost always related to arts, culture, heritage, history, those types of sectors. We do work in other places as well, but that's the majority of it. So regionally and locally throughout northern Utah, we've done long-range arts planning for Ogden, Park City, Logan, Salt Lake, the state. We've done this. We just finished the state of Utah's history strategic plan and Utah humanities strategic plan. So this kind of work is really the bread and butter of what we do and what we get to spend our time doing. So any questions just about me or our approach or our work before we get into an overview of the plan? Okay.
Full screen.
Perfect. Now
that's where we're trying to bend.
Awesome. Okay. And can I click through this? Is that how this works?
Mm-hmm.
There we go. So I just wanted to start with what is an arts master plan? And I won't read you this full thing here, but differently than other master plans, arts master plans are a bit ill-defined. There are certainly many communities that have them, but they take many different forms. So generally what we're looking at is a long-range holistic plan. Importantly for this process, we're looking at the arts broadly. So we're not talking about any one discipline of art. We're also not just talking about public art. We're talking about everything from public art, art education, arts facilities, arts-related events. So it's a lot. It's pretty all-encompassing. We're looking at the arts broadly, and we're also looking at the arts not just as a kind of decorative, a beautification tool. Sure, it can be that, but also as a way to kind of look at economic development, a way to look at community values, community identity, bridging differences, really as a broader tool that the city can leverage, not just a way to make a place beautiful. So that's generally kind of the framing. I just wanted to give you some detail overview. This is the boring stuff, but we have our project divided into three phases. We're kind of transitioning in phases 1 and 2 right now. There's some overlap you'll see in the timeline in a second, but we've been going through some of the discovery, engagement, and assessment work. We're going into starting to develop out the program. So really thinking about what are the best ways the city can support the arts, and tonight's conversation is an important part of really both phases 1 and 2 as we kind of make that transition over. And then as we get over into phase 3, we'll really be producing and writing the plan. I don't expect you to read all this detail, but to give you a sense, we're about halfway through the project. We have nearly completed the engagement work that we're doing. We've got a few more stakeholder roundtables and interviews coming up. We're in the middle of doing some asset mapping, and the preliminary data is coming in on that. That'll be getting updated here soon as well, and we'll get those going. Then we'll be pretty quickly moving into getting into the nitty-gritty of what are the best ways the city can support the arts from a programming perspective, a funding perspective, a policy perspective, partnering with other kind of private sector folks is going to be an important part of this plan in particular. We're learning
But this gives you a general idea of the flow we're working through. I wanted to give you an update as far as engagement and some of the work we've been doing. We are doing a series of open houses where we have a couple of different activities going. One of those events is the activities of what you're doing in the break room in there. So this kind of voting with dollars. So we're having folks come in that are coming to the events. We've done the Spring Spectacular and Art on the Town. We'll also have some folks from the Arts Council set up at the Ladybug Festival at Daybreak. So we'll get some data from that, and then we'll get your voting as well. We'll break those out into separate data sets. But that tool allows us to really get a temperature check from at least participants at that event, right? So not full community, but a sense for what are the ways people are interested in seeing the arts supported. There are 12 different kind of categories that people can participate in, and we give everybody 10 $100 bills so they can kind of spread their money around, but they can't vote on everything, right? So they have to prioritize a bit, and then we have conversations with people as they're participating in those activities. Both of the events that we had so far, the reception has been great, feedback has been great, the turnout has been really good in terms of engagement with the activity. And we also have a mapping exercise where we have a large map of the city, and we have people self-identify where art is in the community as a way to get a sense for what's sticking in people's minds. That'll feed into our asset map, but really it's a way for us to see, okay, what are people remembering and what are people kind of oblivious to, right? And then we also have people place dots in terms of where they want to see art, and we can then start to get some concentrations of what the general public, or at least participating in that, are starting to think about where art makes sense, not necessarily just specific places, but what types of places. And that then feeds into a bunch of our other asset mapping and helps us understand where might we recommend site locations. We also have a survey out right now. The number is probably higher now, but last report we had over 600 responses.
Today it's over 900.
900. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Flip that six upside down.
Yeah.
So 900 responses, and I think that's going to be open for how much longer?
The rest of the day.
The rest of the day. Just today?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Rest of the day. So we'll get, I know Y2 is going to be working on some data analysis on that and giving us a report, and then our team will be working with them to kind of synthesize that data and work it in. And I think that's going to be in the next couple of weeks.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Your survey, is it specific an art survey, or is it another survey that has a couple questions that are art-driven?
It's specific to this project.
Okay, so it's just this project. Okay.
Yeah. There are a couple of questions in terms of people ranking their kind of priority of interest in terms of the way that, I'm trying to remember the exact phrasing, but essentially the way that the city supports quality of life in South Jordan, and those are not all, by any means, all arts related. Right? There are a variety of things there, which will give us a sense for where is arts fall in that hierarchy to some extent.
Thank you.
And then we've also been doing a series of smaller discussions and roundtables with various stakeholder groups, and then we're going to be doing some larger stakeholder roundtables coming up in the next few weeks, month or so. The individual smaller conversations we've had so far have been with Salt Lake County, Arts and Culture, with Live Daybreak, with the Arts Council here at the city, and then with Utah State. And then we'll be meeting with Larry H. Miller Group as well, pending scheduling. But having some conversations about the ways in which those groups are currently supporting the arts and ways that connect to South Jordan, ways they could be in the future, what's their vision, and how do we align this project with those. And we're definitely, as I mentioned before, seeing a lot of opportunity for the city to partner with some of those kind of private or otherwise public organizations. So I think there's some really big, interesting opportunities coming up ahead that we're learning about. So there's just a couple of photos from some of our engagement, seeing the mapping and the voting exercises. This is going to bias you, but do you want to see the voting results that we've had so far, at least? Do you want me to skip it?
I think a couple of them are already biased.
Okay, perfect. So this is what we've had so far from the Spring Spectacular and Art on the Town. So the two columns there, the total on the side, and then we have, these are ranked in order of total. So you can get a sense for where the interest so far is falling. A lot of interest in interactive art and performing arts. And then murals, we heard quite a few people tell us they didn't rank murals as high because it's already happening and they're assuming it will continue, right? So that was one piece that we heard. A lot of interest in arts education, particularly at the Art on the Town event. You can see something like the next one, Land Art, which is really about the most iconic local or regional examples would be the Spiral Jetty, if you know that project out of the Great Salt Lake, or the Sun Tunnels out near Wendover. Those are two big world-renowned projects in the state of Utah. But essentially, like, how do you start to use the land and sculpt the land as an artwork? So that could be a really interesting opportunity to explore somewhere like the regional park, Bingham Creek, or other park type spaces. So there's some kind of cool ideas that could come up from that. And I won't read you through all of these, but if anyone has questions about what these different categories are, how we defined them, one, you'll see it as you participate in the activity, but I can also answer some questions around that too.
Where does the the wraps that we're putting on utility boxes?
I believe we have that one under temporary. Oh. I can't remember if that one on this project we categorized as temporary art activations or functional. I'd have to double check.
I think it's that one kind of had the same maybe status as the murals that residents are already see that we're doing it and are expecting it will continue.
And I can pull that up too to just double check. So quick difference is there functional would also be things like benches, light posts, garbage cans, really city infrastructure, right? And can we then take those and use them as a canvas in a sense, right? Temporary art activations might be similar to some of the interactive art things. They could be, but just lower tech, lower lift usually. It also includes, if you're familiar with kind of placemaking work, kind of what gets referred to as tactical urbanism a lot, but painted crosswalks, building temporary plazas and old parking lots, that kind of stuff, like old, pretty low lift, low tech interventions in space to start to create space where there were, create place where there wasn't otherwise, using arts as a tool for that. So that one kind of ranked middle of the road, but temporary art activations and functional do get a little bit close to one another in terms of category. Any other questions?
Is there any evidence that I've heard, mm-hmm. I'd like to know from your expertise, is there evidence that murals, for example, and places that have been getting tagged mm-hmm. with graffiti, that stops it? Or? It
makes a huge difference. Yeah, I mean, I think you all already experienced that some in the, mm-hmm. the River Parkway, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the tunnel murals. Yeah. But yes, there are many kind of documented studies of that. And I've also been part of many projects where murals have gone into sites that have had that issue. Doesn't mean the issue goes 100% away, though it does get pretty close. It doesn't take those taggers away. It does kind of relocate them, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't mean they're not going to tag
somewhere else.
But it does mitigate that in that particular site pretty exclusively.
Where do we have murals in our city? I mean, I know where Gatebreak has them, but in our city, besides the River Park Bridge, do we have murals anywhere else?
The baseball.
And then we have our crosswalk murals
out here out front. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, last year we did murals on both the softball and baseball complexes.
I need to look at those. I haven't seen them. Okay, thank you.
You'll get to see them during the parade.
Yeah. And I will say that's where we were set up right in front of those during the Spring Spectacular. And several folks, I didn't get to talk to a lot of people at that event because it was very chaotic. There was a lot going on, but several folks did mention that they loved those and that they would like to see more of that type of thing around the city.
Remember, the Dowdle puzzle will become a mural over by the splash pad as well.
The splash pad on Redwood?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you've wondered what the large wall wood coming out of the ground is over there, that's the mural. Home for that mural.
Okay. Thank you. Well,
any other questions on this? Okay. And I will say that we do not take this as an exact directive, right? This just influences us. This gives us a sense of the general temperature of the folks that participated. But just because, for instance, grants and resources ranked at the bottom doesn't mean we're not thinking about that as something that the city should be considering, whether short or long term. It also doesn't mean that, oh, interactive art ranked at the top, we're just going to build you an interactive art plan, right? We definitely are looking at all of these. And I will say, I think every single one, based on the conversation so far, I think every one of these categories are going to have a home in the master plan. It's just they will take maybe different percentages of the recommendations in terms of site opportunities and funding resources to go towards certain things.
If I may, so to that point, I was just thinking in my mind, who does make the definitive final decisions? Is it the Arts Council? Is it the City Council? Like, who's going to sit on the table that says, this is where we're spending our money?
Somewhat to be determined as we go through this process, but generally it's a mix and it depends on the type of project. So something at the scale of a facility might be a different process than, you know, where a public art dollar is going to get spent. Usually, in an example, public art, the standard process that most communities adopt is an Arts Council makes a preliminary recommendation. So there's a call, the Arts Council reviews that, makes a selection, recommends that to City Council, and then the City Council makes a final adoption of that. That's usually the standard flow, but there's a lot of deviations from that. In other places.
This plan is to help us have a guiding document. Ultimately, you are the decision makers when you set the budget. Mm-hmm. So whether we build a facility, offer grants, do programming, that all comes through you through the budgeting process. So ultimately, you are the decision makers on the implementation of this plan.
Right, on the funding piece. But we could fund and then the council could say, oh, here's what we prefer. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea.
That's why they're bringing a plan back so that there's a framework.
Good.
And
perfect.
Tonight's your opportunity to weigh in on that before this plan is finalized. You're going to see it again because ultimately you're going to adopt that master plan like we do any other master planning, whether it's the transportation master plan, the emergency management plan. You guys are the ones that adopt that plan and then implement it as you adopt the budget.
We approve budget. Got it. Thank you.
So, Mr. Liu Sang, I feel like, you know, in our budget, just astonish you that I'd be.
You focused on the budget.
Dustin, but I feel like when, for example, I ask about Mulligan's and, okay, so what are the capital projects of Mulligan's? I mean, you can't tell from the budget document what's coming. And I'm betting it will be the same way on the arts. You know, we'll have an arts budget, but you won't be able to look at that document and say, oh, here's what's coming and here's what is being delayed or didn't get chosen, you know? And I guess for us to be the final voice on that, I'd like to see that level of detail personally. You know.
I'm glad you brought that up. Sunil and I have had some discussions about that. You're going to see the Mulligan CIP much more detailed as we go. That's something that we're working toward. And again, as we have a plan to work from now on the art side, we can do the same on that so that you're seeing that. Because some of these things, I would imagine, will have some hefty price tags associated with them. Mm-hmm. And you should certainly see those. You know, if it's a facility, that's probably going to have its own special attention in the
of
budget.
Course, yeah. Well, there'd be recommendations from the plan.
Yep.
And we might have Mr. McGuire kind of advocating for very specific things for the art council.
Yeah, and we should have this plan before we get into our strategic budgeting in the fall.
Absolutely.
And that'll be a time for you to have some discussions about how you prioritize some of that funding and the projects that you want to see done from that plan. That's your opportunity to weigh in and get those put into the budget process.
That's great. And I think having this plan, too, will make the annual visit from the Arts Council, from the Arts Council chair presenting to the City Council, have a little bit more direction and guidance.
More structure.
Mm-hmm. More structure to it. Actually be able to update, saying, you know, according to the master plan, we've done this and this.
Yeah.
This is something that kind of helps us to now have some direction. In the past, we've been all over the map. Mm-hmm. And this will help start to focus that and work toward very specific goals.
More clarity.
And we often recommend process-wise that combination of, you know, every community is different in terms of their staff, Arts Council structure, but generally some kind of an annual update to the governing entity, whether that's board or in this case you, to say, right, it's like an annual plan. Here's what we're doing this year. Here's what we've done. Here's where we're going. Here's how funding is looking to be sketched out. Particularly when we look at public art and certainly facilities, those projects are planned usually fairly far out when we get into more substantial projects, right? So
sure.
There might be some amount of funding that is available for quick response projects, but usually there's a fairly long lead time. So a typical large-scale public art piece would be for sure a 12, maybe 24-month type of process. So it's not like anything would come to be a surprise, right? So there would likely be a lead-up conversation about those projects, what resources are going to them, where's that money coming from? And then we look at funding, and this will be in the plan will be structured. The funding, we look in three categories. There's annual funding, ongoing funding, and situational funding. And so something like a facility might just be a situational, right? That funding mechanism used for that might be totally different than what's used in terms of annual public art budget. Mm-hmm. And then we'll look at a bunch of different ways to fill those three pots of money, essentially, from you all, but also from other private or other public entities. There's many different avenues, and we approach it holistically in that way.
So to that point, what is our 2023 budget for public art? What did we approve in 2022? I guess is better.
I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I'll find it for you. Or
I was going to say that. So the Arts Council budget is $48,000, which we get we got $23,000 from ZAP. And $18,000 from Rounded Up. And
18,
then,
did you say?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, it was about great. 18, a little more than 18. And then the arts programming budget, so like youth art classes, those types of things that they pay for the classes, there's a $20,000 budget to pay the teachers and things like that. And then theater is a separate budget, and theater was $40,000.
This is why I have Tiffany on the team, because she remembers all those numbers.
Right. You can't know everything. Okay. So then with this master plan, are we looking at, gosh, we're going to have to double, triple? I mean, what are we,
well,
are we
that,
trying
to
operate within
that? Back
to
your discussion in the fall when you were talking about the strategic priorities. And do you want to increase the funding in some of these areas? And as we take into account priority-based budgeting, you're going to weigh that out, right?
Right.
If we want to increase over here, where in the budget do we move that from, or where do we acquire new money from in the budget? That's why we have those discussions in the late fall with you, is to understand your vision of where you want to put the money in which buckets. And Don and his team will show you each program, what it costs to do. So if you want to increase these program costs, then we'll look to see where in the budget you move the money to do it.
Okay. And we have talked about like looking at other grants and different stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the upcoming meetings the steering committee is going to have is just the different funding opportunities that are available. So we can, as part of the plan, have a direction on, different avenues to get additional funding. So it's not just always directly the residents' tax dollar.
Yeah. That's great. We've got SAP and Rounded Up so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will say Rounded Up is a fantastic model. I don't think anybody else in this, certainly not in the state, I don't believe has that. And we've been doing precedent research of other communities nationwide for many years and have not stumbled upon that same model before.
It's a program that we should probably promote more,
mm-hmm,
and encourage our community to participate in.
Yeah, I mean,
and simplify the sign-up process.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was going to say, I think that's what I keep hearing is simplifying it. If there was like a QR code people could scan or something.
I was just thinking of that.
Is this a utility bill, right?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So every month you can round up, or you can round up and add $5 or $10,
and
whatever you want to do. To
mm-hmm. That's significant.
Mm. That is.
That's great. We need to get that. Rachel?
It's impressive.
I was already thinking
about it. Rachel and Sunil, QR code.
Yeah, I love that. Because I think our residents would love to feel like they're part of it and that we're not coming up with any kind of tax increase. Yeah. Okay.
And I think on that funding conversation, part of what I'm hoping to get at tonight's work session is to get a sense for what your vision is for the role the arts play in the future of the community. And get your sense, what's your appetite for that as well, right? Because depending on what your perspectives are, that's going to influence how we then think about the rest of the plan, right? And so it'd be good to, that's my next question, but to kind of explore that together and get a sense from you all, at least in a preliminary sense, right? What does that look like? And we've had this conversation with the steering committee and with community members and with some of the stakeholder roundtables, but or stakeholder interviews. But yeah, I'd be curious to get your perspective on how you see that, how you see, you know, the future of South Jordan and what role the arts might play.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, as you say that, I'm trying to think of how to even frame a response, but because it seems like it can be so big, you know, but I mean, for me, it's like I love those utility box wraps. I love the murals. I love the community play, and I wish it was in a nicer facility.
We're working,
you know. You know, I'm not laying that on you, by the way. You know, I'm supporting you in that idea. So, and then these classes, you know, for the kids that are, or even adults, I suppose, that are interested in art. All those things, for me, kind of wrap into that.
I have really enjoyed going to the art shows. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great time for adults and kids to actually participate. And then, you know, they bring all of their family entourage, and everybody gets to kind of celebrate in that medium that is enjoyable to see. I mean, my wife's an artist, and so she's participated, and I've been there. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of fun to see all of the kids and the parents, grandparents, and everybody else have a great time going through and looking at all the different art, and it's really varied. And so I certainly would support that. We don't really necessarily have a great venue for that, but the Gale Center, whatever we call it, museum, I think it was good enough, and certainly those kind of activities and putting on some art, even here at City Hall, I think those things are very demonstrable of what's happening in the city and what the talent is. And so those kind of opportunities. I love the boxes and those kind of things too, because it's very visible and you get to see those things. So I'd love to see, you know, maybe two plays a year. That would be a lot of fun. Yeah. And I know that's a lot of work. I'm just saying.
We're working on that too.
I'm just saying that's something
we're doing
that,
a different model this year that is helping to facilitate that direction.
I think they would be very well attended and supported. Mm-hmm. And so those are my comments.
Thanks.
And I'll say one thing that we're working toward, at least from our perspective, is looking at ways in which the city can incubate and cultivate more work happening from the ground up, so the city can facilitate and support without having to always be the active programmer, right? And I think that that's gonna scale over time. I think initially the city's doing a lot right now, and that's necessary and great, and maybe it stays at that same capacity. But in terms of if the arts are gonna grow, we need more of that coming from the community as well, and maybe the city can support that in a number of different ways. But that's one big thing that our team's keying into and looking into, is how do we make that sustainable, right? Because I think that growth sustainable. If the arts are going to grow here, how do we do that in a way that is authentic and true from the community, that is sustainable, that isn't overly burdensome on your staff and your arts council? Ultimately, you have to get to the point where some of that is coming from community and you're supporting and facilitating and maybe guiding through something like an arts master plan, but not necessarily having to do all the work.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. This is it. Thank you. We all know that Daybreak has an arts council, mm-hmm. and they have a budget that's incredible.
For now.
Yeah.
And I will, for context, I would say that their budget is akin to many other communities around the Wasatch Front, or several other, maybe not many other, but not Daybreak as a whole, but their arts budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're operating in a similar way, level-wise, to what you know, an Ogden or a Logan or some parts of Davis County. Like there are other communities in the state that do have more than you have currently, but I don't think that they're so far away in terms of.
I don't think there's other cities in the state that have what we have as far as here's the city of South Jordan, and within the city of South Jordan, we have this very organized, very arts-influenced community. And so I know we're all aware of Daybreak, but I don't want to see that we compete or even do anything, but, like, let's cooperate.
Yeah.
So Daybreak pulls off a Fizz Fest every year. They have artists on the street. They're doing ice sculpture and all of that. And so we need to take into consideration, of course, that's not part of our master plan, but it's happening. Mm-hmm. So let's not turn a blind eye to it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I know you're not, but I'm not sure. I think we're getting better at this, but when I first took office, we were not ideal at cooperating with Daybreak. I think we're getting a lot better. But I don't know how that dance looks. I just want to know that we're not ignoring the elephant in the room, that Daybreak's very organized and they put on some exceptional art events. Fizz Fest is one of those. And so why couldn't we as a city say, hey, let's go ahead and count that as something happening in our city. We don't need to ignore that they're doing something really amazing. So I know the Arts Council is getting more aware and more open to that, where 6 years ago it was not ideal. Anyway, I want us to be very aware, as I'm sure you are, I know you are, that we don't need to create some big animal over here when there's already somebody within our community doing some really amazing things that everybody in the city can attend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no reason South Jordan City residents can't attend every Daybreak event. Right?
Yeah, I think that balance is going to be something where we already are thinking a lot about. And truthfully, it's the most complex. You all have a very complex model to look at, right?
Exactly.
Because no one else has a sub. Not only do you have a sub-arts council with Daybreak, but you also have a county arts council, essentially an arts and culture department in Salt Lake County, above you. So you kind of have three layers. That's very uncommon. And so that's an interesting dynamic to explore, but it's also a huge opportunity.
Yes.
And so I think while we don't claim some of the Daybreak work as the city's work, but I think it's a good model in terms of what, one, we're very aware of it and we're mapping with it and thinking about it as we think about site location. We're thinking about that balance between investing where resources are, but also spreading the love, right? There's that balance that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of really good opportunity for partnership there, and thinking about how do we continue to strengthen those opportunities and kind of bake that partnership into the plan.
Love it. That's what I want to hear. Like, let's bake it into the plan. Good, good verbiage. I like it.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know. Were you going to?
I have comments, but you can go ahead. Well, I think mine's pretty quick. And maybe I missed it, but how are we coordinating with the school system and the school district? I mean, there are art programs and classes and things. How are we going to coordinate with all that? Because that's a great avenue for elementary, junior high, high schools to participate in art.
To this point, we haven't much, and I don't know that it's outlined in the scope of work, but it's something we could look at.
I can comment on that. We've tried to reach out to the schools, especially for the box wraps, and it's kind of been a challenge to get in and to really get participation. I think it's something worth us continuing to pursue. Might need to take a different approach to it, and maybe reach out more towards the principals and meet with them first, and then the teachers. I just had mentioned to my son's fourth grade teacher about that Utah League of Cities and Towns essay contest they do every year. And before she could have asked her students to participate in that, she had to go to the principal and make sure it was okay. So maybe the approach that we've had of going directly to the teachers needs to be refined and worked on.
I think it's one of those, if you build it, they will come. If you actually approach them with a project and with some thoughts and things that they can participate in and do, I think we'll get participation from them.
And I think also figure out the right timing of the school year when it's best to approach them.
And those relationships take time, right, to be able to navigate, partly because of the timing. One recommendation I would have, and we can look at putting some of this in the plan, but is to try to have an educator on your arts council whenever that's possible. I know And teachers are taxed. I know it's hard. They are very busy, but the better representation you have on your Arts Council, the more perspectives you're bringing in. And whenever I've engaged with Arts Councils who have, you know, an elementary or junior high school educator on that Arts Council, they are bringing a different dynamic, and they can make those types of projects happen easier than folks on the outside can.
Glad you mentioned that. Just made me think of a teacher to reach out to. You know, his original question was kind of what our vision is for the arts in South Jordan.
Right.
And as I've given it thought, to me, I really think it can be something South Jordan can build part of its identity on. I think our recreation, like the races series and things like that's kind of the other part that South Jordan has the opportunity to build its identity on. Because think about the southwest end of the valley, and a lot of people just think all of our cities blend together, that there's not a lot that separates us. And so I think the arts and our recreation departments, an opportunity for us to kind of brand ourselves and say, you know, come to South Jordan for, you know, your morning race and stay for the theater production. So
there's the tagline, right?
Better than the one that
go home and shower first.
Yeah, go home and shower first.
Come race and sweat and sit down and watch it do.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's just kind of my thoughts on visions in South Jordan. You want to see Mr. Harris?
Yeah, I do want to check with him. Patrick, would you like to add some thoughts to this conversation? Can you saw
Ken? He's taking a nap.
He fell asleep.
Patrick.
We should have made it more lively.
To that point of having an educator on the Arts Council, would it be wise, do we have a South Jordan representative on Live Daybreak?
Yes, we do.
Who is that?
Laura Gaylord. She's our current chair for the South Jordan Arts Council. And she's been on the Live Daybreak Arts Council for a number of years.
Beautiful.
A link there, then.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, there's a link there.
Okay, that's good. So there's,
and she's on our student committee, too.
So. Yeah. Fabulous. Good. So we've got inside collaboration.
That's great.
I think it's helpful, though, as you consider appointments, your appointments to the Arts Council, that we start looking for really qualified people to fill these different niches. Mm-hmm. And so we need to all work together to find the right people to be on that Arts Council to really get behind, support, and implement your vision.
And we can include that as part of our recommendations in the plan of kind of types of professionals and community members who you would want to bring in and maybe what's the appropriate mix, those kinds of things. So.
Probably short a couple members. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're short like six.
I made a note.
And remember, this is one where they don't even have to necessarily live in the city. If they bring the right expertise to the table, that's really what we want. And so I think as you guys have these discussions, you really have to start to identify skills and abilities, professions, influencers that can come in and really start to move the needle on what you want to do.
I'm curious to explore this vision conversation just a bit more. One of the things we've been talking about with the steering committee and some of the stakeholders we've been meeting with is to what scale the arts become part of the city's identity. Does this master plan help guide and steer the arts to grow a bit from where it is and to be more thoughtful and be more proactive? Or does it potentially become a tipping point, a paradigm shift for the city where the arts do become a more significant, robust part of the community's identity? That's one thing that we're balancing right now, right? Because those are two very different things, and that very much changes how we think about the arts master plan. So I'm curious, just like from your perspectives, do you see the arts as being, you know, always one of many parts of the city, or interest in it growing to a more prominent part of the community's identity? Part of what you're known for as a place.
I think I shared my two cents on that.
I don't see our biggest hallmark being the arts. I mean, our logo is a tree. We've got the Jordan River. I personally see South Jordan more as a healthy, active, recreational community. And arts is part of that. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it as the leader. I don't see it out in front, but certainly a priority. And again, we're so lucky to have such an artsy focus in Daybreak. They've got statues and stuff all over the place that we get to enjoy without having to budget for. Mm-hmm. So I don't see it being the forefront myself, mm-hmm. but I do think we've improved quite a bit since I've been on the city council in bringing more art opportunity to the city. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment for people who are very active and outdoorsy and do a lot of walking and athletics. I think that's a great perspective, Tamara, that, you know, we're the pickleball king and queen, whatever, of the world. I think for people who are a little bit more artsy-fartsy, sorry, I think if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how many pickleball courts have we added to South Jordan? How many art venues have we added to South Jordan since we've been on the city council? Mm-hmm. So that's an example. But if you have them available, people will go and they will take their kids mm-hmm. and they will find enjoyment in it. How many productions could you put on and still have people attend? I think you could put four on a year and people will love them and attend them, and the kids will just absolutely have a blast at them. So I'm not saying anything negative. I think there's a balance there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if we put a little bit more emphasis on the arts, that's going to maybe bring a little bit of that balance into play. Mm-hmm. So I'm very supportive. Very supportive.
When I think about, you know, an arts community, I have family that lives in Loveland, Colorado, mm-hmm. and I've every time we go over there, I hear about it's an arts community, you know, and I don't know how that manifests itself other than when I'm driving around, I see statues now and then, you know, public pieces of art on trails, typically, and utility box props. That's how it shows up to me in the week or weekend that I happen to be there. You know, but I don't know what else they have that makes them an arts community. I don't know. But I wouldn't mind being known as an arts community if it didn't require enormous tax increases to do it. You know,
right.
You know, some.
Go ahead.
Some cities, even in the state, you'll go to the city and you'll see moose or you'll see buffaloes, you know. So why couldn't we have...
Yeah, there's buffaloes.
Why couldn't we kind of capitalize on our tree, you know, and have some really interesting art that's made out... I mean, trees that are very artistic and painted and things in various locations... That would be a lot of fun.
Didn't we have buffalo during the Olympics? Like somebody started sticking buffalo everywhere. Am I remembering
like
right?
My
yeah. During the Olympics,
moves like a Park City. That's why I'm.
Didn't we have buffalo around?
St. George has buffaloes yes. for sure.
Was it
Davis County had the buffalo, and Logan had the Aggie steer all over town. But due to some of the deterioration, they had to remove them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, like
just as an example, it doesn't have to be a tree, but. I think that would be kind of fun, you know, to have a variegated colored tree, you know, in different colors in different places.
And have it talk to us. You can have talk
talking.
To him.
Interactive
tree.
Talking tree. I think you know,
this is interactive art, right?
Yeah.
But it could make a neat new Arts Council logo, though.
So
can I ask a clarifying question?
Are you
wanting to use the art to create a sense of place in the community? Or a sense of identity, or is it more to provide amenities that allow art to occur in the community? Because I see those as three different things, and I think that might help them as they look to put this plan together.
Yes.
Place.
I knew you'd say yes to all three. So are you creating a sense of identity, something that people identify South Jordan as being
just
an arts community,
so,
you can come here for arts? Or do we create a sense of place, which unites the community? It's a rallying type of thing.
But then that doesn't that automatically tie in with the other?
It can.
I like it.
Or are we providing amenities and facilities that allow this to just happen in the community? Because, you know, one of our strategic priorities is the open space and amenities. And this is where a lot of these activities are going to fall, is under that strategic priority. So, and, you know, a lot of people, when they hear arts, they just think, oh, you paint something. But arts is much more encompassing, whether it's theatrical, choral, culinary. I mean, do we become, you know, the home of all these new types of restaurants that will supplant the chain restaurants, which I think is going to come in the future?
Pickleball.
Yeah. You know, so how do you see arts as shaping that vision of the community? I guess, is that kind of what you're trying to ask for?
I think you could decorate the trees in the, you know, during the Christmas season or Thanksgiving. You could make them Halloween trees. You could do Valentine trees. I mean, there's a number of things you could do. So anyway, I'll leave it now, but that's just an idea.
Yeah. If I could add one more thing too, you talked about plays and doubling our plays. Has anybody on your committee looked into the fact that we have an incredible theater department at ELA, Early Light Academy? She has a great theater, and they put on probably 6 to 8 plays a year, and nobody taps into them.
So I think it's been a couple years ago now that I spoke with them, and at the time, their facility and their schedule was so full that partnering on something wasn't in their capacity at the time.
Okay.
So it kind of goes back to that, like, okay, what spaces do we have to support community theater, whether it be based out of a school or a community group needing a place? And so that's kind of where we got directed back to. But I have had conversations with them.
I wish we could get some of their Kensington Theater people to participate in our... Do we have anybody from Kensington Theater on our Arts Council?
No.
No.
I think we should bridge that gap. Janelle, could you get
on
that?
A couple of things.
Yeah.
Some of what makes me think of that is, where do those kids go, right? So after they go through this amazing program, they're participating, they're learning. What next, right? Like, what else is the community as a whole doing to cultivate and grow and support those students as they become older, right?
Yeah.
Is it a thing that, you know, are they finding more opportunities, or is it a thing that if they love that, they have to leave this community to do it?
So that theater group has children's theater, because my kids started in second grade. Then they have teen boot camp, where you're teenagers, and now they've created an adult boot camp.
Right.
So they're already recruiting my daughter, who's on a mission, and asking her to be in the next play when she comes to town.
Great.
So they do have a very generational theater, and you've all been to a play there.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That's
amazing quality. But
great
we
job.
Don't, as a city, support or even promote or even advertise any of that. She's very self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
But as we talk about theater, we have an incredible venue. I mean, that the rake in her theater is phenomenal. I was a founding board member of that school, and they really came up with some incredible theater dynamics to put on really good performances.
That's great.
That's just something we should be, again, how Daybreak is a feather in our cap, Kensington Theater is a feather in our cap, and those are operating without any city influence, yet we could bake that into our master plan.
Well, and you know, at the very least, we could promote it.
Right.
You know,
why
could
are they
say,
operating
hey,
on
is,
an island? And
this
we're
is
not...
going on at Kensington this week. Or
yeah. And it's part
so
of our city.
Something we would need to reevaluate as part of our communication plan and what we're
yeah, that's,
to
that's
share.
A, probably a different discussion that we should have
is,
on a different
it's,
topic.
It's an art, like, and it's being done in a stellar level. And it's children, it's teens, and it's adults. So to your point, they have successfully
that's great.
Come up with a plan where you can graduate and still be performing.
That's great.
And so why couldn't we say, hey, another arts thing that's going on in our city, and let people know about it? They don't fill that theater hardly ever.
I never hear about their productions except from you.
From me. So if you don't have a kid in the play, nobody's advertising it. So every time my kid's in the play, they sell out that night, but whatever. So I'm telling everybody about it.
And that marketing
free tickets with every home?
Marketing and communications of arts is a pretty common role that arts councils or city arts departments play. in terms of how do we promote what is happening in our community, even if we're not the one putting it on.
So right. It takes no tax dollars to say, wow, here's an incredible play. Let's tell the city about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, takes little tax dollars.
A little bit, marketing. But it's not like we're putting on the performance and paying for the costumes.
Yeah.
And
we're not doing the whole work.
Right. I think that's a piece that we're, again, not implementing or we're omitting, that I'd like to see us start cooperating more with. Because, again, our city has such great assets sitting there operating, and we could marry that into, bake it into our plan.
Mr. Harris, do you have some thoughts to share with us on this topic?
Sorry, my connection had some connection issues, so I was just kind of getting back on the connectivity here. So,
okay, well, we've been talking about the vision for the arts in South Jordan.
I do have some thoughts on that. I mean, so we attend our family the Arts Council, you know, participated in displaying various activities. And I think there's a lot of various things. I personally think there's a number of things, you know, we have a broad scale of, you know, a number of things that we're doing. I think there's benefit that way. It could benefit the largest number of people. You know, when I had my my bills that I was choosing the various, because I participated in that as well. You know, I was kind of looking at and reading it and seeing where do I think this would benefit the most people. And that's where I believe, I think, is we're choosing these things. It's easy. I think it's easy to kind of choose from the arts, like what is the thing that I might personally like the most, but I really try to make sure I focus on what are the things that I think will potentially impact, you know, the most people. So I think, the most people be in our city be able to participate in as well. So that's something that I've been interested in.
Thank you.
Yep.
I have another question for you real quick, if we can.
Okay.
It's the next slide, if we don't mind going there, but if not, it's okay. I'm curious to get your sense of what success in the arts looks like in South Jordan. And what I mean by that is, I think it gets at the same question you were starting to pass over, is to some way, who are we building this for, and what's the end game, right? Is this about quality of life for residents? Is this about tourism? Is this about economic development? Is this, what's the goal there? And what are some of the markers of that? Is it, more public art in places everyone sees, like the utility boxes or murals or sculptures around? Is it a big anchor facility? Is it that we have artists growing up here and doing great things in the world? Like, what does that start to become, right? I'm curious to get your sense. What feels like success for you if we look long range?
Jason, do you want to start out?
I was thinking he didn't give me a heads up on this question through all our other meetings. Success for me would be adding to the quality of life for our residents. And as a byproduct, you get the economic development, you know, whether it's, you know, some new startup restaurant wanting to be in that area, or just people wanting to bring their art gallery to South Jordan, or to create art-making places to South Jordan. But for me, it really is more about looking at how arts can improve the quality of life for our residents. One of the things I really like about arts is that has a way to unite people that otherwise wouldn't maybe be in the same room together, or they may not sit down in a conversation. And as we look at just kind of the division that's taking place in society, I think, more opportunity that we can have to bring people together in a setting in which barriers kind of melt away, the better off we are, and it improves the quality of life for our residents.
That's great. Thank you.
Sure.
I think, back to the three things you brought, I like the sense of place. I think our residents tend to have a really high regard for our city, and I want that to be enduring. Do we need like a famous artist to raise up in South Jordan? No. But what I like is when there's no barriers. I like what you said. There's no financial barriers. So whether I'm the family that has a lot of money at my disposal or not, I can engage in the arts on a semi-equal basis to the other family. When we've had times when we were financially destitute, I loved getting into things that were maybe not cost prohibitive. And we need to be sensitive to that in our city. We have a lot of parents and families that have abundance. We have some that don't. And so things that are easy access, so there's no financial cost to some of the things we do. Obviously, there's, you know, to go to a play, it costs, but we've kept our ticket prices down. And you know, something like a tree or the wrapped boxes, that costs nothing. I can engage with those. I can walk the trails at daybreak and be around the sculpture. It doesn't cost me anything. So that a lot of our art experiences don't require a ticket. That people and kids and families can unite with no financial strain on their budget. I guess I'm sensitive to that.
Yeah. We had a lot of comments about that at the art show, the artists and people coming to view
it.
Appreciate the fact that we still don't charge a fee to enter or to come.
Okay. I loved that. And just walking around your art on the town was, I wish I could have stayed longer. It was really a fun vibe, and it was, you know, you could buy something if you wanted, but if you didn't want to, you could walk around and engage and then go home, have a PBJ, you know? And there was nobody, there was no classification, I guess. I'd like to be sensitive to that when it comes to the arts.
That's really helpful.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this last Saturday, just a few days ago, I went to a soccer game for my four-year-old granddaughter. And I'll relate it a little bit to that activity in that, and I agree with both comments, were fantastic. It's a sense of community. It's something you do, you can go to. It's a lot of fun. It brings a lot of people together. It's just fun. It's enjoyable. The kids get great exercise. There's still a lot of granola bars and fruit and, you know, fun things for everybody, and it's the bringing of people together that I really felt when I was there. And these are just 4-year olds out running around in these little packs of, you know, just a lot of fun. And I think the same thing happens with art, is we get to all go. It's either free, or it's a very low cost, and it's something enjoyable that brings the community together. And I think that's certainly my objective and goal, as opposed to are we going to be, you know, is there some notoriety section of some newspaper somewhere? I could care less. It's a community thing for me, and I like the fact that it's available to all in the community, and to some of the neighbors and relatives outside the community to come in and participate. That's what I feel that the purpose is.
Thank you.
Yeah, but Mr. Harris, do you want to share your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know what success looks like. I think for each individual, I think that might be different. And so I don't want to get into it for how the recipients of our art feel or what they do. But I think from our perspective, anytime that we are doing something with city resources, holding an event or anything like that, I think success is really determined on how successful we are in getting that message out. You know, that, hey, we are going to be holding an event and this is what it's going to be like. So people become aware. I think we do, and I don't think that's specific to the arts, by the way. I think that's just in general. You know, if we're going to take the time and resources, you know, to put these things on, let's, you know, make sure that we broadcast it effectively, you know, get it on, you know, whatever, whether it's on our website or, you know, putting it on Facebook, whatever sources are, but the more effective we can be, I've seen it before over by Mulligan. Sometimes we'll have like a banner that says, you know, hey, when there's an event, you know, hey, this is coming up, where we can showcase those things. But that's where I think is like determining success is just that we've done enough, you know, pre-work ahead of time to get the message out to everyone.
For me, I have to agree with my colleagues here. This is about opportunities in the community more than like notoriety or something like that. I think opportunities for our residents to participate in the arts, to enjoy the arts, that's what it's about for me, in my mind. And how you measure that, I'm not exactly sure how you would measure it. Maybe it does lead to some economic development. You know, maybe there's more art studios that show up in the city or something like that, just because we have that kind of thing going on in our city, you know, or I'm really unclear about how you would measure that, but opportunity for our residents is what's important in my mind.
And I think that's what's important in terms of what we need in terms of guidance is not necessarily how might we measure it, but what are we measuring, right? And so that understanding that it's really about quality of life gives us a different lens to look at the project than if you had just answered that question by saying notoriety, tourism, business recruitment, those kinds of things, right? We would take a different approach to the rest of the project. And so that helps us be able to then think about, okay, as we make site selection, as we make funding recommendations, this needs to come back to quality of life for residents first and foremost. That's the core goal, right? That's the core why behind this. All those other things can happen as a result, but it's not why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
If I could make another comment. One of the things, I think Janelle just came on board when this just gives you a snapshot of kind of how we operate. Our Summerfest has evolved. Years and years and years ago, we paid a really high ticket item for some chick to come stand on the stage and sing. Remember?
Oh, I'm alert.
We paid a boatload of money. And we all realized the average person sitting there listening to the concert was not a South Jordan resident. And I, for one, was like, I'm tired of spending taxpayer dollars for everybody to immigrate and come watch Chickaboom up on the stage. Mm-hmm. So we did away with that, right? And we said, let's find out what our residents like seeing. What do our residents want to do? What turns this into fun for them? And the last South Jordan Summerfest we had like reptiles and chalk art, and I could walk around at no expense and visit every one of those things. And I had parents say to me, thank you so much for providing things that I don't have to buy a ticket to go ride a roller coaster for my kid to throw up. Right? So I'm just saying.
I can still do that.
Or me to throw up.
But they could meander around and have this experience, a cultural, fun, art, reptile, all of that experience. And I think our Summerfest has evolved to, I love it way more now than I did 4 years ago. It's just different. It's a different vibe. And I love it. And I'd like to see that kind of continue into this. If that helps you kind of understand how we as a city of, I think that's how we prioritize right now. Yeah. Now another council could come along in 5 years and shift to Chickaboom on the stage, right? Yeah. But
from the arts, that really changes the way we think about it too, right? Because you could look at a mural and you can look at a $2,500 mural by an emerging local artist versus a $250,000 mural from a world-renowned artist that are the same size and both are painted on a wall, right? Yeah. And so thinking about what are those differences and what's the goal, right? Both are good options. They just have different outcomes. There's a different goal, a different motivation behind them. So it's very helpful for us to be able to think about what are we going for, right? Who are we recruiting? Who are we building this for?
That's great.
Yeah, we got to move. Here, don't we?
Yeah. good discussion. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Jake.
Thank you all.
Thank you, yeah.
Thank you all for
Thanks.
Being here.
Thanks, Tiffany, for staying late.
Yeah, no problem. How much did we pay for her? $50,000, $80,000
It was $40,000 or $50,000. Yeah. And it was my idea, by
I'm
the
sorry.
Way.
I'm sorry.
And it got rained out.
I went to the concert and I was like, these are not even South Jordan residents.
We were. Okay. No.
Reba? No?
Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. Who was it?
Was it Reba?
We had Leanne Rimes when you
were Leanne Rimes.
Yeah, you had Leanne
we had Reba McIntyre, but that was the, oh, but that's the intense thunderstorms and it got rained out.
Reba
chance.
Wasn't the one that got
Oh, it was
Wynonna.
Or
Wynonna.
No, it was
Wynonna. Sorry.
Wynonna.
You said Reba and that blocked
me. That wasn't Reba.
It was Wynonna.
I don't think we ever had Reba.
Okay. Hey, we need to be moving here. Police services.
So, most of you, I believe, received an email from Salt Lake Councilwoman Amy Winder Newton towards the end of April, asking about getting some feedback from you regarding police services. And as you know, this has been a big issue for us, something that we've been heavily involved in for the last year. It's actually something that Chief Carr's been involved in for the last 20-plus years. He's probably the foremost expert on Salt Lake County Sheriff and Unified Police Services. Having worked in the Sheriff's Office many years ago, having been around when the legislature first tackled these issues, right up through this last legislative session, which has basically changed how UPD and the Sheriff will be providing services going forward. Councilwoman Newton asked for your feedback. I wanted to have Chief Carr come tonight, be able to give you some updates, some background, let you know kind of where things are, what that future looks like, and then find out from you if you would like to respond individually to Ms. Winder or if you would like us to draft a letter on your behalf. The chief intends to draft his own letter because he received an email directly from her, and he has much more detail from an operational standpoint to provide. But we thought it would be good to kind of update you and find out what direction you would like to go for a response back, since she did ask for one. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the chief and let him kind of share some things, and then you can pick his brain for the other things you want to know about.
So just quickly, if you think about law enforcement in Salt Lake County back in, say, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, you maybe had one or two cities that had police departments, and you had the county sheriff that was really providing law enforcement to the entire county. And during that time, he or she, it was a he at that time, was allowed to use the general fund, so everybody paid into what the sheriff provided, even, say, Salt Lake City residents back in the day. Well, as things changed and more cities began their own police services, in about 2001, Senate Bill 168 came about, which basically said Salt Lake County and the sheriff's office, you can't use general fund dollars to provide investigative services, and paramedics was included in that. There was a fire component to that, to provide and charge the entire county to provide services to what you're now providing services to, which was the unincorporated county and a few contract cities that had become cities, like Taylorsville in the beginning, and they were using the county to contract services. So the legislature said that's a no-no, and they forced us to create what was known as the Municipal Services Fund. So we cut $9 million from general fund tax dollars that were going to the sheriff. We raised taxes for half of that amount to the unincorporated county citizens and the contract cities. And then we just cut about $4.5 million from what the sheriff was doing at the time. That kind of situation kind of kept morphing, and I guess we got back into that a little bit, and so it raised its head with the Salt Lake County Council, and they began to study this again, and they put together a committee, and they actually asked me to serve on this committee with several others, and so we began to examine this, and as we examined it, it appeared that some of those practices
prior to Senate Bill 168 in 2001 time had kind of come back. And so we said, wait a minute. For instance, the gang unit was funded from the county's general fund, but between the gang unit and DEA, which is the drug task force, 14 of 16 positions were being funded out of the general fund. But those people were all being funded through UPD, which is a collective that came together to provide services to their residents, Mill Creek, Holiday, Midvale, and a couple of towns, a few townships. So as we looked at that, there was this bill that came forward to say we should really separate those two entities, the sheriff and UPD, because there's an interest there from the sheriff being involved in both of those entities that could funnel money to those two entities. And that's how the representative, Tusher's bill did. And so they, as on the heels of that, Amy Winder Newton sent every council in the county and every police chief in the county that letter that you got and said, let us know what you think of these things. Let us know what services you want to use. And so as we looked at them, I think it's clear we can support things, at least from my perspective, we can support things like search and rescue and jail and the court security and those types of things that are historically and statutorily the sheriff's duties. I think there are some major questions with the other countywide services that they have listed. I still believe we should support a county collective with gangs and drugs. I just think it needs to be funded differently and allow individual cities to use those countywide tax dollars to pay for participation either in the gang unit or on the drug task force. Remember, right now, South Jordan residents are paying to have a UPD officer on that task force, as is Murray, Sandy, Salt Lake City, who has their own gang task force. Is their residents are paying to have a UPD officer on the task force. I think this legislation is going to address some of that to some degree, but I think Amy Winder Newton wants to hear from all of the councils about how you feel about these things and how, what would you rather have us do? And on this committee that I was on, we talked about that. We talked about, a way to do that. If the county funded everybody to have a position on the county task force, we would have better communication, better coordination between the agencies than having 14 gang task force officers from one entity on the task force. So, in my view, those are the things that we want to kind of support, the gang and the drug initiatives. We should try to support those as long as it's not funneled, all the money isn't funneled to one entity. As long as it's an equitable and transparent process, and those that want to contribute somebody get some reimbursement from Salt Lake County, then I think it's a good thing.
Personnel.
Yes, right. Instead of everybody just, getting out of one entity. And I understand how that happened because of the tie to the sheriff's office, but it's not equitable and it's not transparent to the taxpayers. Some of the other things that they have listed here, I think are better served at the local level and letting those individual cities handle those things. Some of them we don't use. We don't use crime analysis. We do our own crime analysis, as does every other city in the valley. We don't have Salt Lake County doing those things. There are a couple of things that I think we should consider supporting and maybe using some of that money that has been funneled to UPD. We're going to need additional jail space. There's just no question about it. With the growth in the county, we're going to need additional jail space. We should be looking at that. I've had conversations with the sheriff. She's starting to talk about those things, which I think are positive. Some of that money could be funneled to that. Some of the money could be funneled to additional mental health services through the MCOT teams, the mobile crisis outreach teams, and things of that nature. Those are good things that almost everybody can support in Salt Lake County. So that's where I plan to kind of outline my concerns. And I think some other chiefs will probably do that as well. And we stand ready to help you guys if you want to send a letter give you a little more clarity if you need it about this issue and try to ensure that we give some input, because that's what they're asking for. They want to know. And if we don't give them input, they're going to say, we asked, they didn't answer, so let's just do what we need to do, you know, or what they think is best. So I think they're asking, we should respond. That's my two cents on it. And in a nutshell, in a real quick summary, that's kind of where we're at.
I have questions.
I would love to see your comments on, I remember there was just a litany of different.
There's a lot of.
And I don't think I need a dissertation on each one, but, you know, we think this ought to be done on county basis. We think this ought to be done on a citywide basis, or whatever your comment is. I'd like to take a look at that and see if I support it, or maybe have a specific question. I doubt that I'll have any or very many concerns after you put that together, but would that be too much work?
No, we can do that. In fact, I've kind of worked on my letter, so I'm pretty close on that. So, you know,
we can send you the original white paper that we wrote, which has some of this background. We can send you some notes that the chief has put together. If you'd rather have some bullet points that you could then write your own comments, that's kind of what I needed to know, how to best help you respond. Because as the chief mentioned, it's important to respond.
I'm kind of in favor of having a letter from the council.
A single letter?
That says, look at his letter. look at Chief Carr's letter.
We support this stance.
We don't have the expertise to sit down and write our own.
I mean, the minute I got that, I forwarded the email off to you. And
it's really a taxation policy issue, like, for the most part.
This is what
we're talking about.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that I support or have if there's a problem, then I want to echo that problem, but I doubt there will be, and I totally agree. This ought to come from the council so that they know we've looked at it, we've talked about it, and here's what we think about it.
Yeah, we can do that.
I think that's a great idea, but I think I would additionally love to see your bullet points. And then if any of us decide we want to put a kind of an explanation point behind it, we could say, hey, by the way, Amy, I feel strongly about these three things. And we could choose to do that, but at least we could have a united, here's how South Jordan City feels. If you share that with us, then we could all see if we feel in agreement.
Yeah, we can do that.
What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I like the letter idea.
Okay.
So we'll...
Patrick, do you want to say anything on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chief Carr touched base on a lot of my thoughts, but I think we have the best police department, you know, in the state. And I think I think most things that we can handle on a local level, I think we do a good job on it. But I think there are certain things, you know, that it probably does make sense to handle at a county level. But I want that to be, you know, somewhat of a small list, and there needs to be, you know, thorough reason to say, hey, we probably doesn't make sense for us to wholly fund this specifically at a city level and have it, you know, it makes sense to share, you know, resources. That's how I look at it. It's shared resources where everyone benefits from it. I like it. If it's a situation where it's like, hey, it really doesn't benefit South Jordan City, but we'll take, you know, those type of dollars and it's allocated in areas that really don't benefit our residents a ton. I don't want to probably try to get away from that as much as possible. But I think Chief Carr has, I think he's, you know, from what I've heard, it sounds like he's done a good job in kind of understanding the needs of our city. So I'm supportive of a collective, you know, letter, you know, that we put together.
Great.
We'll draft a letter. We'll draft a list of bullet points. We'll have the chief's full letter, and I will send to you the original white paper that we worked on and sent originally.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief and Mr. Lewis. Summerfest Parade.
I'll invite Janelle back up there were some questions that have arisen about some of our new parade rules and how they came about that a couple of you have had questions about. So I thought I'd just have Janelle come, give you an overview brief, and then if there were any other Summerfest issues that you guys wanted to touch base on, we could try to answer those as well.
So the new rules are posted on our website and also part of the parade entry application. And a lot of this, unfortunately, stemmed from the death and tragedy up in Kaysville this last year, where little girl was killed in their parade.
It was very tragic.
Yeah, it was rough on the community. It's been rough on the event coordinators. There is a group through the state that is under the umbrella of the Utah Recreation and Parks Association. And they got together, as well as like our planning group. We got a committee together of representative staff from the city and went over different ways that we can hopefully prevent something like that or even similar from occurring in our parade. And that the new rules that were adopted or put into place for this year came as a result of our own internal committee and then aligning with what the state and the municipalities as part of that greater organization are going to this year. And we are the first parade, so we'll be the first that we'll see those rules go into action, but neighboring cities in the region and across the state are adopting those. I don't know if you're familiar with them or you've got an overview. The main points are those under 8 years old need to be in a seatbelt in the vehicle that they're riding in, and then any over eight.
I thought you were talking about people sitting on the sidelines in a seatbelt. I'm like, you're kidding me.
We're going to stake them into the ground. No, the parade entries is what we're talking about.
Be in the back of the truck helping us throw candy anymore.
So they would need to be in a seatbelt, and then anyone eight or over could be in the back, but they just cannot be getting on and off during the parade.
Yeah, that makes sense. Seated.
They do need to be seated. Seated in the back.
And people can't come back and forth to the vehicle either. So if they're, passing out candy or Frisbees or brochures and they run out, they can't go back to the mothership to reload. Wow. So they have to take whatever supply they need from the very start of the parade route to the end. There's no coming back to the vehicle.
Or distribute it from the vehicle.
Yes.
So we can't throw candy then?
You can
toss candy. We've never been technically able to throw.
We distribute now.
It can be distributed.
Toss candy.
Yes.
She didn't die from running out to get candy.
How did she die?
She fell from the trailer, if I understood right.
Getting on and off and fell.
And then the truck.
Right? It was.
So it's like a gymnastics off and on thing. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
And the other thing that we're going to do, we're going to implement parade marshals, which are our own volunteers, which will help to make sure that the rules are being followed by the participants, as well as the spectators. Because one of the other great dangers are kids running out to pick up the candy. And you've all seen this.
Yes.
So we're going to work with that. One of the things, too, about having only the eight and older in the back is that should help get the candy tossed further. Usually where we have the problem is with the younger children not clearing the sides and having it fall in the front or the back. This should help with that. And having the marshals there to help people, kids, you got to stay back, or they can step in and clear the candy between entries. So those are some of the big changes on that. And remember, our float will be in a lot of parades, and so we have to abide by these rules in other cities when we go there, and we're asking that they abide by them when they come to our parade. Now, I know that affects you. I know it affects you to bring grandchildren, some that still have children under those ages. We want to try to find a way to make this work as best we can. I don't have all the answers, but I am open to figuring out the best solutions we
can sign a waiver?
That work. So
she's 7 and a half.
Nope.
Janelle, does so the ruck race starts at 7?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep, the 5K. Okay. And ruck.
I think I want to be in a ruck and I just walk, but it shouldn't take more than an hour. That'll get me to the fire department by 8.
You need lots of pancakes to refuel.
The start and the finish is near. Is near the breakfast. It's in that same area.
The ruck starts at what time? Did you say
7? And then the kids run 7:30.
I can do that.
You all should be able to make the ruck in time to get back to the fire station by pickup.
You might have to send the fire truck to pick me up.
Pancakes start at 8, right?
I think so.
I've done the ruck previously and still made it to the driver's.
The breakfast starts at 8.
I think there's a little bit of difference there. And what time does the parade start?
Then?
9. So we load up at 8:45.
Load 8:45.
Yeah, it'll be like we've done in previous years. We'll come by and get you at quarter till, and then get you right to the start at 9, and then we're the first ones down the parade route. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is the route the same?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. We'll have the big flag this year. I think we're still looking for some volunteers to help carry that flag.
The Brent Taylor flag?
Yes.
Nice.
We'll have that again. We're also still looking for volunteers as parade marshals. So if you have family, friends, or neighbors that would like a true front row seat, would like to volunteer for an hour or two, Janelle could use some parade marshal volunteers.
I would suggest we put it on social media.
We're working on some things to get the word out to some different groups.
Marshals.
All right, Janelle, for the flag, mm-hmm. you might be able to reach out to the Youth Rotary down Lobos.
We have.
Okay. We've reached out to them. We've also reached out to the police and fire academies to have some police and fire for ourselves.
Our youth council?
Youth council is already all busy.
Okay.
We need more youth council. We've overtasked them with items to help us with.
Okay. So parade marshals, what's the age limit on that?
I prefer 18 plus.
Okay. The very responsible adult, how does that sound?
Yeah. And they're stationed in an area?
They'll be assigned an area on your own. Okay.
Yeah. Did you have any other questions about Summerfest? Or I think you mentioned the parade preview.
I want to hear about the Tuesday event.
Yeah.
Because this is new.
Yeah, so 5 to 8 p.m. at Highland Park, we'll have the parade preview. People can come. We'll have a couple floats and city vehicles, and we'll have characters, kite flying, food trucks. The jazz dunk team will be there. I'm trying to think of everything. There's a lot, but 5 to 8. We're also going to be giving away some root beer garden mugs and encouraging people to come back and get those refilled at the main activities at City Park later on in the week.
Love it.
And so, yeah, 5 to 8 p.m., characters, meet and greets as well. We get an up-close picture with the float.
So characters, kites, jazz dunk team, parade preview.
Yeah. And that is there's a Facebook event for that as well.
That's Friday night.
Tuesday.
So we have something every night.
Remember,
of the week
you asked us to have something out on the west side earlier in the week to kick that off.
I just didn't
off.
Know the exact day.
Yep, Tuesday. And then Wednesday night will be the Mulligans events that traditionally used to kick off Summerfest. Now that's night two.
That's 4 to 9 p.m.
Do we have an email with all of this outlined? Because I haven't seen it.
There is a really good schedule on our website. And then I'll send that to you. And Mel is working on a specific
She'll be dropping
reference.
Off some stuff.
Okay. Card for you as well.
Summary. Mm-hmm. I'd like that in my email quick so I can block out times.
Yeah. The concerts have some great entertainment this year.
Are we doing Battle of the Bands?
No.
Oh, bummer. Why not?
Participation was a little bit down in with the amount we were spending on it. We were able to attract some other bigger names.
Okay, so who's coming?
Leanne Rhymes coming.
Men without hats.
When are we getting our shirts?
Older
and
folks
stuff?
Will remember.
I think Mel has them.
Yes, your shirts are sitting on your chairs in there.
Men without hats.
Mm-hmm. You know, if your friends don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine.
Oh, that's Men Without Hats.
And Pop Goes the World. Yes, you've
that
heard
80s stuff.
Early 80s.
Nice.
I'm suddenly feeling very young.
You were like 5. Jason, you were 5.
Some of us were.
You're right.
I was 13.
Any other questions on Summerfest?
Probably, but we're out of time.
The book that's coming out as well, so you should see
you
that.
You should see that, and that'll have everything in it, too.
That's great. Can we look at the normal fireworks show?
We'll have a good fireworks show.
I'm willing to give you a motion, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Janelle.
We're not saying we're done.
We're
motion. I'll take the motion.
I'll second that.
I'll move that we adjourn.
I'll second that.